I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even at commentary. Nobody can touch me.
Hey there, wrestling fans, it is I, C, and Jew, the best Jew in the world, here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews, right here on the Absolution Network. This is episode 41, and on this episode, we continue WrestleMania month as we take a look at the 10th anniversary of WrestleMania, WrestleMania 10. So aptly named. I mean, hey, we could also say that it was WrestleMania X to, you know, fit with the, you know, what they're doing now of WrestleMania just push play. which, by the way, a lot of people have been saying that. I firmly believe that we all know that it's WrestleMania 31. That's just the logo, and they just don't have the number in the logo, which it is what it is. It's not the first time we've not seen the actual number of WrestleMania in the logo. I mean, do we forget WrestleMania 2000? And yes, some people say, well, there was a number, it was just the year. I'm like, yeah, but at the same time, they didn't call it WrestleMania. It was 17, I believe that was. Yeah, 15, or 16, excuse me. They called it WrestleMania 2000 instead of WrestleMania 16. Because it took place in the year 2000. Got old Conan O'Brien bit for you youngins there. It's kind of funny that we're reviewing this because, you know, there are a lot of people that are not excited about WrestleMania and feel that the build-up has been lackluster. And, you know, for that matter, WWE writing has been lackluster. And, like, I can't think of any better time that can parallel that than 1994. Because, to be quite honest, wrestling at that time wasn't a downturn. And writing was kind of lackluster and not, you know, moving with the times. And, of course, this changed in a couple years when WCW and WWE would ignite the Monday Night Wars. That would, incredibly raise the product to levels not ever seen and not seen again. I think there's a lot of parallels with the current time, though. I will say this, I am happy that finally they, like, pushed play on, like, several storylines. To hit that, you know, afterburner going into WrestleMania. And I am, of course, talking about Undertaker and Wyatt. We finally saw something from The Undertaker. I'm like, we knew it was going to happen. It's like, just do it already. Don't get me wrong. I say that loving Bray Wyatt's promos. I mean, I don't know whose promos are better at this point. Bray Wyatt or Paul Heyman. My God. We're going to have a battle a discussion at least about that when it comes time to the WrestleCast mid-year reviews. Maddie, if you're listening, I'm just saying, I think there's going to be a very fierce debate on that night about best on Mike, because do you give it to Paul Heyman or do you give it to Bray Wyatt? Because goddamn, it's like punch for punch. It's like a heavyweight fight on who's doing the better promo, because all the excitement for the world title match is because of Paul Heyman. And all the excitement for the Undertaker match is because of Bray Wyatt. So, but it was great to finally see a sign from the Undertaker. It was great that they pushed play on the Cena-Rusev match, which we all knew was going to happen. And I'm glad that they've gone with the ruthless aggression, kind of heelish. And if I'm wrong, I mean, I never thought in my life I'd be saying and begging for John Cena to be heel, or at least do heelish behavior. And, yeah, that's my John Cena, by the way. The one who will lock you in the STFU, make you pass out, third water, and you're like, we ain't done, son! And lock it right back in. And I do kind of like the fact that they are playing off of, what's kind of been outed as the relationship between Lana and Rusev, as TMZ has apparently outed that. And last but not least, you have Randy Orton. And I was really afraid about how far were they going to take the storyline of, we all knew Randy was going to be after Seth. It's like, when are they going to pull the trigger? Are they going to pull it the night before WrestleMania and have it be a last minute match? And I was kind of scared there. Thank God they pulled it last Monday night. I mean, we all saw it coming, and don't get me wrong, I loved every minute of it. I loved Randy Orton giving Seth Rollins his comeuppance. But it's like, this should have been activated over a month ago, before Fastlane. And it's like, it should have been where Randy came back, cost him the Rumble, or cost him the championship match, which would have made, I think, the heavyweight match better, because, Seth Rollins comes in, Orton comes in, RKO Seth Rollins in the triple threat, allows Brock Lesnar to get the pin. That gives Lesnar a bit of weakness that I think Lesnar needs. See, Heyman does a great job of making him like an unstoppable beast. I just hate the kiss-assery that WWE gives him in his matches, to where, it's like, you need to show that chink in the armor. Just that little chink in the armor. But I digress. And this storyline should have been going on for 2 months to build up to Mania. And he's not with the Authority, and they're throwing everything against him to prevent him to get to Rollins, and he finally gets to Rollins. A lot of these storylines, they could have done better. And again, that goes to writing, which again, we're going to talk about tonight. Because I think it definitely bears talking about with WrestleMania 10. It's interesting. I'm going to praise it for its booking and yet criticize it for its writing within the matches. So we both got some criticism and some praise to go around. Again, the 10th anniversary, something I found interesting is basically throughout the night, they had 10 matches. And so between each matches, though, I think one or two took place in between one break. They had these flashback moments, which definitely could have been better. And it's like the choices they made. What was the highlight of this Mania? Well, each Mania has tons of WrestleMania moments. For instance, when they talk about WrestleMania 5, they talk about Jake the Snake versus Rick Martel in a blindfold match. And it's like, that's definitely a match you should have talked about. You should have also talked about Macho Man versus Hogan for the title. Among other things, for that matter. So, we're going to talk about writing when we get into each match. So, Let me give you the tail tape, and why don't you say we get into the pay-per-view proper, shall we? WWE WrestleMania 10, also WrestleMania X, tagline 10 years in the making, took place on March 20th, 1994, among an attendance of 18,065 in the legendary Madison Square Garden in New York City, New York. Your color commentators are Jerry Lawler, Vince McMahon, with interviewing by Todd Pedigree, of course, the Fink, along with guest announcers and everything. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into WrestleMania 10. Want to make mention of the dark match that was not seen on TV that took place before the event started proper. You had the heavenly bodies of Jimmy Del Rey and Tom Pritchard with Jim Cornette versus the Bushwhackers of Luke and Butch. The heavenly bodies won by crooked means, as I've read. So the pay-per-view starts with, of course, America the Beautiful being sung. In this WrestleMania, it's sung by Little Richard, and it's a great rendition. I do want to talk about something before I get to the first match, though, and that is commentary. There was kind of Dr. Hyde, or Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde here, because in one hand, I thought the King was a great heel commentator throughout the night. I could not stand Vince McMahon's commentating. I mean, you know, Gorilla Monsoon understood, you know, I think tone and all of that, and I think Vince was great for Raw in some respects, but I think him being the commentator for a lot of, was a lot of the problem of what happened, or part of the reason why WWE didn't do so well in the mid-90s, because I think he wasn't the best commentator. I mean, I understand people look at him maybe with nostalgic eyes as a commentator, especially with Jesse the Body Ventura and others, but yeah, he just annoyed me. I just felt he was too loud, he was overbearing. I mean, it's one thing like be, you know, to question what the heels are doing, but like just outright cheering for the faces, just, I didn't like it. I mean, I guess to be fair, when you're squished in between, on one hand you have Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse the Body Ventura, and then you have the other legendary tag team on the other side after you, of Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler, you're kind of screwed. But, I didn't like his commentary, though. I will say this, the things that kind of made him annoying on commentating are the things that made him such a great heel and would be quintessential to the villain that was Mr. McMahon during the Attitude Era. So it's interesting to see that. But yeah, some of my enjoyment for this night was kind of tempered by his commentating. Our first match is a match I had never seen before, and I very much look forward to it because I had heard the legends of this match. And I will say, they didn't disappoint. Owen Hart versus Bret Hart for in a singles match as part of a feud. Now, the thing is, Bret and Yokozuna, for that matter, or just Yokozuna or Lex Luger, whoever won their match that would happen later, would go on. They, the winner of that match, and Bret would have a match for the title because, again, this was the year of the, you know, dual Royal Rumble win where both Luger and Bret Hart won the Royal Rumble. But, you know, this was a feud that, you know, took, you know, again, Owen trying to come out from under Bret's shadow. And, you know, this was just a wonderful match. Just a great, fast pace, quintessential wrestling. I mean, there's a reason this match gets so much praise. I'm like, it's just classic, mat-based, classic Ketchum, Texas Ketchum, Ketch-Can style, and you, how you say, wrestling. It's whatever you want to call it. It's just awesome, and it was a great match. I kept watching, like, wow, these guys, they are really making their father proud, and they're really showing, you know, all the hardships of the Hart Family Foundation, Hart Family Dungeon are worth it, because this is what turns out. And you know, if you know my comments on the whole Bill DeMont saga, yeah, that was exactly directed at that. Because, my God, they put on a show in that first match. It was, I mean, you want to talk about a way to open the show. This match, without a doubt, was this WrestleMania's Macho Man, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. You know, and yet another parallel I feel I kind of see here with WrestleMania 3 as well. This is a great match, and I love the ending to where it's like Bret's going for his sort of classic victory roll, and Owen sees it and counters it by going into it and then falling back to get the pin. Just a great job, and just an absolutely wonderful match. And like, a hell of a way to start it. And, you know, after seeing that match, it put the pedestal high for every other match that night, which unfortunately I feel most didn't meet. Our next match is a mixed tag team match. Bam Bam Bigelow and Luna Vachon versus Doink the Clown and Dink the Clown. And this is a fun little match, but I mean, there's one point to where, you know, Bam Bam goes for a headbutt and completely misses. It's not him. It's Yokozuna. I'm sorry. I hate to put that on Bam Bam. But there were some spots that just looked sloppy. And that's something that throughout most of the matches I felt like there was a lot of sloppiness throughout a lot of the matches. But, you know, the thing about it is, it didn't seem like a WrestleMania match. You know, this seemed more like a match that was meant for Raw. I do like that Bam Bam, because again, I was cheering for him, but, you know, Bam Bam get the win. So once again, you have the heel winning. Again, I'm pointing this out for booking reasons. It's just an okay match. Now, our next match is confusing because of what its tagline is. Our next match is Randy Savage versus Crush with Mr. Fuji in a Falls Count Anywhere match. Now, you would think there would be one fall, but basically the rules are Falls Count Anywhere, and in fact, they want you to have a fall outside of the ring, because part of it is you pin them outside the ring, and then they have 60 seconds to get back to the ring. This definitely fit well with the time of, like, this and death matches and all of these, like, different matches that were pretty much the same match but had these, like, different little rules and tweaks that made them different. But really, when you look back on them, it's like, why didn't you just do it the normal way? And, you know what, this is a solid match. You know, I could be more harsher on it, I think, but at the same point in time, this was a good send-off, as this was Macho Man's last televised match on World Wrestling Entertainment. Essentially, it was his retirement match. at least from the WWE, especially since he would never come back. I mean, it was solid. I mean, again, each wrestler got a fall, and each wrestler just barely makes it back into the ring, and then it ultimately leads to Macho Man, like, slamming him to a wall, getting the pin, and then attempting to hoist him up by his ankles, which didn't do so well, but of course, I gotta give it to Crush. He sold it well, that he couldn't untie himself, ultimately getting back in 60 seconds. So, yeah, a solid match, and loved Macho Man's gear and everything. Yeah, solid match, even if the rules are kind of iffy. Our next match is Alundra Blayze, the current WWF Women's Champion, versus Liana Kai for the WWF Women's Championship. Squash match. I mean, I understand it went for, well, 3 minutes, 20 seconds, but Liana Kai just never seemed like she was a threat. I mean, she didn't have any presence for her to be a threat to Alundra Blayze. I mean, I give it up. Alundra Blayze had some great maneuvers, the Hurricane Rana, the German Suplex. There's some sloppiness, though, in this match as well. This just didn't seem like a match for WrestleMania. This seemed like a match for Raw. You know, I find it funny that this match is put in, yet the 10-man tag match isn't. And that's moved to Raw. Again, not the first time we will see, you know, matches that are scheduled to be for Mania being moved out of it and the following night on Raw. But anyways, I'll say this. At least WWE here was smart enough to actually try to put a story about it to where the reason it didn't happen is because the heel team couldn't figure out who would be the captain. Because I think it was like supposed to be an elimination-style tag match. I will say this about Alundra Blayze. I really feel bad because I don't think she really ever faced any, even in WCW, she never had a women's division that really matched her skill. You know, I would have loved to see Alundra Blayze face Chyna. I mean, I think that's the ultimate everybody wants to see. Chyna versus Alundra Blayze, a.k.a. Medusa. I mean, but could you imagine Alundra Blayze facing Trish Stratus or Lita or Jazz or Jacqueline? All those great female wrestlers, you know, Ivory, Mickey James. I mean, that real talent that could have, like, matched her skill. I mean, and I say that because, of course, she's going into the Hall of Fame this year. Something she obviously does deserve. You know, I guess Chyna will be that one wrestler who we always hope will one day, the last great female wrestler who we want to see in the Hall of Fame. Her, Sable, and probably Tori Wilson. Of course, Tori and Sable for other reasons other than just wrestling. I mean, and before anybody knocks me for that, I mean, they have goddamn Sonny in the Hall of Fame. Sonny really didn't do any wrestling either. So, and everybody also wants Miss Elizabeth. So, if you want Miss Elizabeth and Sonny, I don't think you should complain about wanting Sable and Tori Wilson or even a Stacey Keibler in the Hall of Fame for the women's division. But yeah, I mean, getting back to the match, I love the German suplex, and I like the Hurricane Rana she did, but other than that, this seemed like a match that should have been on Raw. I was going to say, as the next match is, which is for the WWF Tag Team Championship, we have Man on a Mission of Mo and Big Daddy V. Viscera the Love Machine. Viscera the Acolyte of Darkness. Mabel the Man of a Thousand Gimmicks. May he rest in peace. With Oscar, their manager, rapper, introducer. Versus the Quebecers of Jacques and Pierre in Mountie uniforms. Of course, I try to remember who off the top of my head who is the one. I think it's Jacques who went on and broke the tag team first and became I'm the Mountie, which that was their entrance music. By the way, with Johnny Polo. It's a solid match, but it's not a WrestleMania solid type of match. Like, again, there's a certain level of execution and finesse of a match to where if, you know, this feels like a WrestleMania match. Even if it wasn't the best match in the world, if it at least felt like it had that big event feel to it, you know, if it's on that WrestleMania card. This didn't have that big event feel, and this really feels like this could have been on Raw. And I bring up Raw because Raw was going on at this point. And of course, I mean, you have Men on a Mission winning, but by countout, it's just not what I was expecting. I mean, Mabel did a good job. I mean, he had some good maneuvers, but again, there's a lot of I don't want to say laziness, but a lot of, I'm trying to think of the word because I said the word earlier, sloppy. Sloppy is the word I was trying to think of. Very, very sloppy. I mean, the Quebecers had some great tag team moves. I mean, those sort of I call them assisted sentons. The backdrops into sentons and everything were really interesting tag team maneuvers. But it's just like, again, Mabel is just this big guy and this big blob, and it's like, I've never been a fan of those big wrestlers, and I give it up to them for being wrestlers. It's just, it never worked for me. And Man on a Mission, just, the tag team just doesn't work for me. And it's like, when one of the tag teams doesn't work for you, it kind of hurts your enjoyment, I think. So maybe it's just me. But overall, the match was okay, but I thought, especially considering the count of victory for Man on the Mission, this was a match better suited for Raw. Now, our next match definitely steps it up and definitely has a WrestleMania feel to it. In a singles match for the WWF Championship, featuring special ring announcer, as I'm trying to get it up here, Donnie Wahlberg, with special timekeeper Rhonda Shears from Up All Night. We have the WWF champion Yokozuna with Mr. Fuji and his American speaking voice counterpart of Jim Cornette versus Lex, the American Express Luger, with special guest referee Mr. Perfect. Now, can I just say something? One of my favorite moments of this WrestleMania happened here because Rhonda Shears. I was all of a sudden a goddamn motherfucking, like, let's see, wait a minute, 94. I was like 9 years old again. It was my formative years. There are several women that that were my version of, how your uncles who like lived in the 80s talk about, Princess Leia and that slave bikini. Well, for me it was different. For me it was people like Rhonda Shears and Elvira that were my aforementioned discovery moments. And of course she goes, wow, I'm actually looking her up. She was born to a Jewish American family. Us Jews never looked that good. The name should be should told me something up. Yeah. She had my formative year, so it was great to see, like, Rhonda Shears. Oh, honey. I have a couple wrestling maneuvers I would love to teach you. And then I felt really, really old because I'm like, God damn it, Really? Has it been 20 years up all night? Oh my god, I'm old. Just put me in the pinewood box and bury me, man. I mean, this was a solid match, and I think another reason why the other aforementioned matches, from Bam Bam to Man on a Mission, didn't work for me is the storytelling in the match I didn't feel was, again, up to speed and really felt sloppy. It's another part of the reason why they felt like they were meant for Raw. I mean, the storytelling in the match was really, really sloppy. Here, it was done much better. I mean, you don't see the Mr. Perfect turn on Lex Luger happening. I mean, he actually referees the match pretty fair and square. It's not till the end they're like, wait, why is he doing this? And it's like, oh my god, no, he's not turning on him and something's up. And ultimately disqualifies Lex Luger. And obviously, which should have never happened. And in a certain way, I love this because it by the technicality, yes, he should have disqualified him because he put his hands on the referee. But it's like, it's not like he like shoved him hard or anything like throughout the match. It was like he just barely put his hands on him. It was like, what? What's going on? And then tried to go for the pin again after, he had hit Yokozuna with the forearm. I think everybody knew that something was up and that like Mr. Perfect had screwed Luger. Which, again, that crowd came alive for that match. Not as loud as they would be for other matches or for the Owen and Bret Hart match. And, it was a solid match. But really, it's a storytelling because, again, it would help further the story that would continue throughout the night. In fact, it was continuing a story that was a large part of the Owen Hart match, which they did a great job of telling the story and putting an element of the story of Bret's hurt leg into it. Let's move on to our next match. Well, I guess we really can't call it a match because it's only 35 seconds. And yes, it's once again a squash as Earthquake defeated Adam Bomb in mere record time. The whole thing was Harvey Wimperman comes out up and he's like trashing the Fink. Of course, this would be part of the thing that would lead to the feud between Wimpleman and Fink, and that would happen as tuxedo matches, which I really do want to watch those. But, the Fink pushes him. Adam Bomb comes out and pushes Fink, and Earthquake comes out, hits him from behind. Match starts. Earthquake, quickly, slams him down, and then goes to the Earthquake and gets the quick pin. So, yeah, squash. Yeah. No. I guess it's better than being completely removed from the card. But, yeah. Now, let's not focus on this, because, again, like I said, squash. So, next, and by next, I mean, god damn it, to tell you how, well, I guess, I'll leave that for later, that comment. But let's say it's the match that this Mania is actually known for. The first ever ladder match in the WWE. Well, technically not the first, as Bret and Shawn did one for a show but it was never televised and never acknowledged. Kind of like how the King of the Ring had been happening for years before the 93 King of the Ring. Was just never acknowledged. Because again, that's why Harley Race was the king, because he won that year's King of the Ring. But, so technically, though it's not the first ladder match, what's acknowledged as the first ladder match, or at least here, for the undisputed WWF Intercontinental Championship, as the current Intercontinental Champion Razor Ramon faces the other Intercontinental Champion, Shawn Michaels, with Diesel. Oh my god, this match was great. I mean, you have classic Shawn Michaels, classic 90s Shawn Michaels at his best. Diesel plays his character wonderful. You have Razor Ramon just at the peak and best of his career. And it's just, they put on an awesome match. I mean, back and forth, and it's like, it's this great basic blueprint about what makes a good ladder match. It's something we kind of, I think, forget because we've come so far with ladder matches, and especially because of the level that was raised by the Hardys and Edge of Christian and the Dudleys and so on. You know, we think of all these death-defying spots and maneuvers and ladder matches, but, you know, we forget that a ladder match can be just a one-on-one contest, and like what makes it on a basic level so entertaining, and like just the maneuvers that Sean does here, you know, the one that's shown over and over and over again of him coming off with the splash from the top of the ladder, the one where he rides the ladder over him, just so there are innovative ways to use the ladder as a weapon. It's just, I mean, at 18 minutes and 47 seconds, I do believe it is the Owen match, the Owen-Brett match is longer at 20 minutes, but it's the second longest match of the evening, and it's just, it's entertaining from start to finish. I mean, and just the storytelling by them, you know, you have Sean and Diesel, and they come out, and they go around the ladder, and Sean's like this, and he's like posing everything, and then here comes Razor Ramon, and like, I'm Razor Ramon. I'm the bad guy. I don't go around the ladder. I go under the ladder. And just go under the ladder and then like take the pick and like throws. And I was like, oh my god, that's just so Razor Ramon. And gotta remember that I don't have much to go by this era. Because again, I wasn't watching WWE at this time. But I do faintly remember seeing elements of Razor Ramon and of Diesel for that matter, because I do remember watching the when I was young, somehow watching the King of the Ring, or somehow the 93 King of the Ring, because I faintly remember watching Hogan's last match in WWE, or at least the last match at that time when I was young. But yeah, just an excellent match, and I love the end. Great way to tell the end, to where, you know, Sean gets caught, and you know, in the effort to get his leg out, he ends up getting his arm caught, and by the time he gets it out, Razor's able to take down the titles. It's just great storytelling, and of course Razor falls off, and he has to prop the ladder and goes up, and he just has that great pose moment. And I think that showed you how much faith they had in Razor, because they put him over Shawn Michaels, who was, again, would become their golden boy, for that matter. I mean, both wrestlers, I mean, put each other over, because they just put on a spectacular match, and it's a reason this, along with Owen and Brett, were the coin flip for match of the year in 94. Just an absolutely incredible match, a historic match. Just had that big heavyweight fight feel to it. It's like, the whole match is a WrestleMania moment, as far as I'm concerned. And then, last but not least, you have Bret Hart versus Yokozuna, the WWF champion, for the WWF champion. Now, you have a couple of things to be said here. Your guest timekeeper was Jenny Garth from 90210. And your special guest ring announcer was Burt Reynolds. And your special guest referee is a man who appeared on the very first WrestleMania. In fact, he appeared in the main event of the very first WrestleMania. Ladies and gentlemen, Roddy Piper! Ugh, kind of hurt my throat there. And like, when Piper came out, my god, the garden lit up. Oh my god, it lit up. I mean, that place exploded. I think Piper got the biggest pop of the night. Which I kind of do find funny. Biggest pop of the night goes to somebody who, I mean, it's not even somebody necessarily, not the big celebrities, but Reynolds or the wrestlers, goes to Roddy Piper returning. At least has to be a special guest referee. And my god, Piper did a great job as special guest referee. I mean, just added element to the stories that made it entertaining and everything. And it was just wonderful. And, you know, it was an okay match. It was a solid match. you know what? It's the ending. And, you know, even though I hadn't seen this before, and even though I do know the ending, by the way it was booked and everything that had happened story-wise, I think you could tell that Hart was going to win the title. But just how they did it to where Yokozuna... It's not even because it's something that Brett does. He just somehow loses balance, and that causes Brett to get the pin. It just came... I've talked about this with Brock Lesnar to where you make him seem unstoppable, and you do things to make him seem like this beast. Again, you're making this UFC fighter look like he's so much better that like UFC fighters are so much better than wrestlers, and they're not in the league of UFC fighters. And it's the same thing here. It's like Brett should have at least done something to knock him off the rope, to make him look like he was better than, like, was able to use his brain and smarts and speeds to get the better of Yokozuna. But instead, it just looked like it was just pure luck. And in a moment to where you're trying to present Bret Hart as your new face of your company, I think that hurt Bret in the long run. Because it doesn't give it the feel that he beat Yokozuna. It's like, Yokozuna beat Yokozuna. And I just think that hurt the match in the long run, at least for me. I mean, and mind you, it was a great image and a great storytelling. Everybody coming out, cheering for Brett. Macho Man, again, doing a great job. Like, Brett's the man. Bret Hart's the man. And, like, putting Brett over. And when they're hoisting, and of course, Owen comes like, no. I finally got in from under your shadow, but now you're the champion. And just, great storytelling from both Owen and from Brett. But, yeah, that ending, that just hurt it. I mean, it was a solid match, but it just, that ending hurt it. So, that's it for WrestleMania 10. Top three moments. What one? Number three, Rhonda Shear. Rhonda Shear and her two friends just being up all night. Deserve moment number three, just right off the bat. Moment number two. I'm gonna sort of cheat here. Two and one are gonna come from the ladder match. Number two is when Shawn rides the ladder down over Razor Ramon, but number one has to be the splash. It's the thing that sticks out the most in my mind. Well, that and Rhonda Shear's being up all night. And yes, that's gonna be my catchphrase, and I'm just gonna be looking up more of Rhonda Shear's later. That's all I'm gonna sit here and say about that. As for my top three matches, number three, I guess I would say, would be that final match because of the it concluding the storyline of the pay-per-view of WrestleMania 10. But it suffers from the same sort of... I'm going to go back and correct myself. Because I've been thinking about this entire review. And I'm actually going to give it to Yokozuna versus Lex Luger, because I thought the storytelling was better in that, and at least the ending for that match made more sense than the ending of the eventual main event, because of how it concluded and how it continued the storylines. And, again, like I said, it was a very solid match. So, Yokozuna versus Lex Luger, number three. Now, number two and number one, this is what you're waiting for, because which is it? Owen and Brett or Shawn and Razor? Bar none, number two, I have to give it to Owen and Brett. I mean, it's just a wonderful match, and it's amazing. And, yeah, it's definitely a coin flip, but I also think it depends on what you like. But for me, number one has to be Razor versus Shawn. Because as good as Owen versus Brett was... Let's be honest, the match that's remembered at WrestleMania 10 is Razor Ramon versus Shawn Michaels in the ladder match. And for very good reason. So my number one match of the evening is the ladder match for the Intercontinental Championship between Michaels and Ramon. I guess final views is like final ratings. You know, I think you can see, you know, there's a lot of parallels with this pay-per-view WrestleMania 3 that it don't have the best storytelling like WrestleMania 3 did. Booking-wise, they did a great job to where, you know, the heels, I mean, if the faces won, they won cleanly, but, you know, a lot of the face wins seemed like, you know, face values. I mean, with Savage and Blaze, and there wasn't much to them, and Man on the Mission got a count out, but there was a lot of moments of heels also winning in the main storyline of Owen versus Brett, and Yokozuna and the Screwjob that built the storyline up, but not as good as what WrestleMania 3, and I just kind of saw some parallels in the booking there of like having those big important parts, the bad guys winning, to make you doubt whether Bret Hart would win it. And I thought they, booking-wise, did a good job, but the storytelling selling, I think, in a lot of matches was, with exception of the main storyline and the final match, wasn't there. There's just, I don't feel like, I think there's a lot of sloppiness, and there's just, outside of the Owen versus Bret and Razor Ramon versus Shawn Michaels, I don't think there's much to remember it. I think it is, I think all WrestleManias are worth watching because they are the pay-per-view of the year, and they're a great, I think, they're, you know, I always say this about the Royal Rumble, and I say this about SummerSlam. They're great time capsules of, and Survivor Series as well, of what the WWE was in specific years, and specific points. And this is no different. I mean, definitely watch this for the Shawn Michaels Razor Ramon ladder match, and definitely watch it for Owen Hart versus Bret Hart. But in the span of WrestleMania, it's just like, yeah, not the best by any means. I'm gonna give WrestleMania 10 a 2.5 out of 5. It's just middle of the road, despite having those two excellent matches on it. They don't really save it from sloppy storytelling throughout it. Vince's obnoxious commentating, and just an ending that just felt like a cop-out to save the character of Yokozuna, Bret winning. So, 2.5 out of 5 for me for WrestleMania 10. And, that is it for this episode of CM News Wrestling Reviews. If you have any comments or anything, want to disagree, agree with me on WrestleMania 10, remember there are simple ways to contact the show. One, you can contact the show by emailing us at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also contact us on Stitcher by going to www.stitcher.com. It's an app that you can also put in your iPhone and everything to listen to podcasts. Like us, listen to our podcast there, and leave us a comment there. And you can always leave a comment on the, you know, on our Facebook page, which you can find by going to Facebook and searching for the Absolution Network. Like us, leave us a comment there. And you can always leave a comment on the website itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. And, of course, while you're there, check out all the other 132 Productions content and other websites. This, of course, includes my Tom's Prerogative, Tom's Top 10, Intergalactic Graphic Review podcast, which I do with Edwin, Shin Tiger Curls Wrestling and Anime and Fighting Video Game Videos, John Ramos's Toku Videos, the Anicast, Otaku Momentum, and many more. Also, make sure you check out my Comic Book Crazy podcasting site at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com, where you can find Hexcast and Comic Book Crazy and Spectacular Webs. And also make sure you check out my Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And Also, while you're there, check out all our friends. This, of course, includes Matty J and TWK and the WrestleCast at RVTEntertainment.com. Michael Bailey and Views from the Long Box. Spidey Dude and Clone Sucker Chronicles. Steven Schleicher and the Major Spoilers Podcast. And, of course, Scott Godner and the Tutu Freaks Podcasting Network. And that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. Next week, we hit another milestone as we take a look at Austin versus The Rock 1. Yes, we are going to be in the height of the Attitude Era as we take a look at WrestleMania 15. So until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CM Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world!
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, nobody without too negative a diva. I believe, yes, I believe, I said I believe. And I'm on two feet, one beat, brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight and through the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of through the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be holding a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the layers and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them wanna live that fast life.